I can't talk.
Good morning, everybody. Have you much? Do they work? I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Good morning. Senator Pappas, thank you for giving me your sore throat.
Actually, I want to clarify that I don't have a sore throat. I have laryngitis. So I actually feel fine, even though I sound terrible. I just don't have a voice. So you must have gotten your sore throat from somebody else.
I think it's a Senate
block. Anyway, I hear Senator Stump has a sore throat.
Representative Hilty is getting everybody sick over in the House chamber. So. Why don't we today go over, start with your new idea for your grant program.
Okay.
You can give our House members some idea of what you're doing.
Okay, I passed out this. It's kind of a summary of the different provisions of the program. And, well, we all know... Oh, let me take a sip here. Okay, we know that it's really important for us to get... more people into college, more students into college. We are going to have a workforce shortage in the future, and that our traditional college-age students who, you know, whose parents went to college, the numbers of those are declining, and we have a lot of non-traditional students who are first generation who we really need to get into college. And, we're working with K-12 so that they have more rigor. All students are considered post-secondary material, even if they don't go to a four-year college. They need to do some kind of post-secondary work. Well, one of the big barriers for these first-generational students is obviously the cost, and so we're all concerned about tuition, but it also includes the cost of attendance. They tend to be loan-averse, and we all know that our students take on too much of a loan burden anyway. So, and then we've also learned that if you tell students that college is free, or literally free, that what we saw with the Power of You, that's been the most successful thing with the Power of You is the marketing. So we have a couple different proposals here. Oh boy, it's getting bad. I know this is hurting everyone's ears, my voice. I passed out a handout. We're asking, first of all, that all colleges who get the state grant have a partnership with at least two high schools that are underperforming in terms of sending kids to college. We know that a lot of our colleges are doing that, but we just want to stress that it's really important that the colleges be engaged with the high schools in working with the students, both on their FAFSA application. We had that discussion yesterday, arranging a visit to the college campus. I just want to tell you a little story. When I was teaching in high school, at a high school in my district, I found out that I would always ask them, because it was a college course in a high school, how many of you are, where are you planning to go for college? And I had this whole group of Hmong girls who all said they were going to St. Olaf. I thought, St. Olaf, the west side of St. Paul, Hmong girls going to St. Olaf. Well, that's because St. Olaf was up in the high school working with the kids, doing college visits, telling them that they're going to work out the financial aid for them.
Yeah.
So I think it really is helpful when colleges do that. It really doesn't hurt. Just so it hurts your ears. Now, the other thing that... Yeah,
if I could just add to what you're saying, St. Olaf has had, since its beginning, a commitment to immigrant education and reaching out to immigrant groups for higher education, just to add that to your...
That's great. That's great. So that's the first thing on the handout that's in the bill. The second thing I discovered through some of the research that I did, and several of us attended the Midwest Higher Education Commission's conference last November. And there was a researcher from California who talked about the research he'd done on summer bridge programs, that we know that too many of our kids need remedial education, especially going to the two-year college, but often even the University of Minnesota. And they use up their state grant money with these remedial courses during the regular semester. So the summer bridge programs have been shown to be very successful in getting a certain segment of students just that much more prepared for college. So So I allow them to use the state grant program to pay for a summer grant, a summer bridge program to get them more prepared. Oh, thanks. Maybe this will help. To get them more prepared to be successful in college. The other advantages to the summer bridge program is they create kind of a support group of the students they're going with. They have their cohort, their friendship circle, their support group, what you will. They also learn about kind of their way around the campus during that summer. So they become more familiar with the campus. So that's the second thing. So whatever the skills that they lack that are identified through an ACCUPLACER or an ACT test, if it's reading, if it's writing, if it's math, whatever it is that they need, they've got that little bump during the Summer Bridge program. Then the Minnesota Promise is really more or less a marketing campaign, because for low-income students who are Pell Grant eligible, the Pell Grant and the state grant covers their tuition. Students just don't know that. So we need to tell them that if you are low income, you can go to a two-year college free, literally. And then the fourth area is just through some of our research, we found that moving you need to start college planning earlier. So right now in law it says that the college planning program that the Office of Higher Education administers starts in eighth grade, and we just moved that up to seventh grade. That's the program. On the back of the page is my reshaping of the ACHIEVE program, which we can talk about at a later time. But it also is consistent with trying to get more of these non-traditional, low-income students whose parents did not go to college aware of college, prepared for college, in college, and successful in college. Any questions?
Representative Wilkins.
Madam Chair. Just a question here. We have, like, P16, we really, higher ed meshes with K-12 quite well and frequently, and we want more of that, is the impetus. As a middle school teacher, wouldn't this be better placed, and wouldn't it reach more kids who are possible first-generation kids if it was enacted in the high schools? Or middle schools, for that matter.
Mr. Gehrman and Representative Slocum, it is in the middle schools and the high schools. That's where the Get Ready programs of the Office of Higher Education administers. They get federal money and some state money. And also the Intervention for College Access program, a lot of that is aimed at the high schools and the middle schools. And if we could continue with this discussion, I have a list of two things that are on our spreadsheet we could pass out, with the advising and counseling grants, and so the advising and counseling grants go with the chief. So pass up a list of ICAP grantees. I think there's about 20, I'm not sure how many ICAP grants, Intervention for College Access Program, that we fund. And I've been working with the Office of Higher Education, with Nancy Walters in particular. Oh, we're still getting copies of that, but we'll pass it out in a little while. These grants go out all over the state. But there's language in the bill that says they should give priority to the grantees who got the grant the last 2 years. And the purpose for that is so we have 4 years of data. They have to evaluate their programs. And with 4 years, it gives them more time to really evaluate whether these are successful programs in outreach to the middle school students, to the high school students, and getting them aware of and prepared for college. And then we can know, we're also asking them to advise us as to whether these programs are scalable, meaning they're only getting a small grant to reach a small number of students. Let's look at which ones are most successful and see if we can expand those.
Mr. Chair, sorry, that the gavel passed and I forgot to note that. And Senator Pappas, we do, I know in Minneapolis we do an explore test for college readiness for junior high kids, middle school kids. And then we do an additional one in high school. So they do have some assessments on college readiness. And it seems to me that this would be, this looks like it serves kids who are kind of already at the door. And my concern is I want us to serve kids who might not be knocking at the door.
Mr. Chairman, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, this is, I had a much bigger agenda, and a lot of it had to do with K-12, and I decided that there's only so much that we can handle given the limited amount of money that we have. So we had, you know, we had a surplus on the state grant. The House members have decided to do, you know, 10 semesters. I decided with a small amount of that money, and it's not very much, it's only like $3 or $4 million, to provide that remedial program in the summer. And there are very successful, oh, here's another handout, the Summer Bridge Program handout. There are already some very successful, including the Mesabi Range Community College is serving 50 students in 10 schools with their Summer Bridge Program. Minneapolis Community and Technical College, Minnesota West Community and Technical College, Century College, I believe that the one we visited, Normandale, they are already doing the Summer Bridge Program. This would allow them to expand that to offer it to more students. The students who really need a lot of remedial, we really need to get them to take those tough classes in high school, and that's a K-12 issue for sure. But this is for students who, they're almost there, you know, and especially in returning students, too. I mean, that Summer Bridge Program, when I went back to grad school, I did a Summer Bridge Program. A lot of us mid-careers forgot our math, needed some speed reading courses, took some economics to help us get ready for grad school. I think that kind of review can be really helpful for a certain segment of students. But you're right, it's not everybody. It's not perfect.
Senator, where did you come up with the dollar a month for your grant, the summer grant program?
Mr. Albrecht?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, the one-time grant is in the state grant program.
Where did we come up with that figure?
The figure of 4.77, if I'm reading it right here on the spreadsheet. Is there an estimated amount of students or
the Office of Higher Education?
Did that come from OHSU?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, yes, that was based on a fiscal note on the original bill that was introduced and heard in the Senate.
They came from the Office of Higher Education. They estimated how many students would be eligible through whatever method they use. We also...
go ahead.
Oh, never mind. CFC program.
The assigned family responsibility, you want to talk a little bit about that and versus maybe just our proposal on lowering the student share?
Mr. Chairman and members, the assigned family responsibility was just an item that can help, I believe can help part-time students and students who are independent students. So we just saw that as an area that maybe we needed to look at. But I think based on the testimony the other day, our companies, and I could consult with them, but they might be amenable to putting more of a focus on the two areas that were mentioned, the LME and the four-year cap.
Yeah. So you're willing to give that up already?
Well, if you give up the student share.
Well, but doesn't the student share help everybody?
But so does LME.
Yeah, LME does too, but we've got a much better figure for LME.
I think
that... come up to our number.
I think we are interested in that. I think that the information we've gotten is that if we're trying to set the price right, the areas that need the most work are the four-year cap and the LME.
Well, let's talk about the four-year cap because, you know, we just went up a little bit and we've got a difference of about $1,100.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, what is the, maybe OHSU or somebody can help me, what are the number of students that are going to a four-year Minsky institution totally? Well, I know what it is. I got a strategy here, Kerry. Mr. Miscanis, what's the total amount of students going to the Mankato's, Bemidji's, St. Clouds of the world?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Mark Miscanis, Office of Higher Education, we'll have to search for that data. Actually, NISU people might have it more readily at hand.
Because my point being this, you know, we can bring up the four-year cap to... the whatever you went to, 11038. But not one penny of that is none of that is going to go to a four-year institution at Minskew, is it? If we, wouldn't our 9938 just about reach every tuition level at the four-year university Minskew system?
Mr. Chairman, just on your original question, it's about 56,000 attend those schools. And to your second question, this came up yesterday, Mr. Zitterer, I think it started to address it if I tried to raise the question. And Senator Sharon was pursuing it as well. The fact of the matter is that at Minskew system, just they're underneath the cap and tuition goes up, the program automatically covers that. So they already get the benefit. It's where the institutions where the tuition is capped, they don't get any unless you make a policy change.
Well, right, but the four-year maximum going to 11.38 costs $26,000. $2,600, and I think that, you know, the investment that the House made and the LME and student share in that basically is fair and reaches everybody, as that chart showed yesterday. But, you know, the whole, maybe we should have a little discussion about this tuition in general,
mm-hmm.
and how it's gone up and how it's busting our students. And you know, maybe Mr. Zetterberg wants to come up and tell us why, you know, it's getting very, very expensive and students are getting more and more in debt. And we try to spread that money around to help everybody. I think our program and our proposal is really kind of fair to everybody. And if we go up to your maximum on the four-year, and even on the two-year, Madam Chair, it's costing us a lot of money that we distribute it in different ways that helps people, whether they're going to the private or the ministry system. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, certainly there's a philosophy of kind of giving a little bit to everyone, but there also is there are students who have different needs and make different choices. And we have had a system where we've allowed student choice. And sometimes students do choose University of Minnesota or a private institution, and frankly, Minskew is bursting at the seams, so we're kind of lucky we have other choices. The university is maxed out. And for some students, you know, a private college, if they can put the money together or they can get institutional aid or scholarships, can be a very, very great choice for them. And I don't think we should just say only the rich can go to a private college. It's a really nice opportunity for low-income students to be able to go to a McAllister or a Hamline or, you know, a Concordia.
And I agree with you 100%, you know, but I think that, you know, increasing the LME and different things that we did, reducing the student share, helps everybody. So, Mr. Zetterberg, how do we get a cap on, and, you know, the university, I don't know if you saw that sheet that Representative Downey passed out, compared the, I think, the rate of inflation or the implicit price deflator, whatever he used, to the tuition increases, and compared the dollars we were giving you in the increases to what actually happened with the tuition at the university. I don't know if you saw that sheet, but that he had, and maybe we can get you a copy of it. But it was kind of, you know, alarming as to the rate of tuition increases at the university, particularly. And I just want to know, you know, I mean, I congratulate you for your middle income scholarship, which we've got, by the way, in our bill, and what you did with that money a couple years ago, and your low income scholarship. But tell us how you get a handle on how we get a handle on tuition at the university.
Mr. Chair, the university's tuition on the Which of these campuses for Minnesota resident students remains right in the middle of the Big Ten? What has happened at the university is not any different than what has happened for public institutions in all 50 states. Unfortunately, it's gone up and it continues to go up. Is that state funding, not only in Minnesota, but also nationwide, is now chasing other priorities that states have. We understand that. We understand the changing demographics. We understand that states have to spend more on a population that is generally growing older. We understand that states health will always be the highest priority when it comes to this. I don't have a simple answer. It's a national problem. It's a national issue.
Okay. Well, members, I'm just, concerned because testimony keeps coming from the students themselves about affordability. And, again, I just think that our package that we put together is, with the help of Representative Haas and Slocum, is a well-rounded program and Representative McFarland was on it too, that's right. It's a well-rounded program that helps everybody, and I agree with you on the private colleges. They play a very important role, but the LME and student share, I think, helps everybody. From the private to on down.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to have someone from the private colleges come forward, and I think they have a handout that might be helpful for this discussion. I talked to them a little bit yesterday about it, and it's just a good visual on what happens with our current grant program.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Scott McMahon with the Minnesota Private College Council. After yesterday's discussion, I shared with Senator Roebling a document that we've been working with on a number of years, and she's requested that I make this available for the full committee. This is looking over about a 15-year time span what the maximum state grant award has been in comparison to the average tuition at the various systems in the state, looking at the Minscu 2 years, 4 years, University of Minnesota, and then the colleges within our association. This just kind of lays out a little bit graphically for an understanding as to where the maximum grant is in comparison to two tuitions. And you can see over time there's been some fluctuation across all sectors. There's been a decrease against all sectors over the course of the past 7 years or so. But currently, looking at this year's average tuition within the various sectors, the University of Minnesota, the maximum state grant award is roughly 80% of the average tuition and fees of the University of Minnesota. Within the MinSCUs, it's just ballparking the numbers off of where they go there, about 104% or so at the Minscu 4 years, and 123-124-ish for the Minscu 5 years. If you look down at the bottom there, at our nice high price institution, we're somewhere down in the 30-35% range.
Question, members. I guess I would just say that this graph looks pretty constant as far as everybody's share going up and going down. Take 2001 as a high point. Those dips and drops look a little more drastic for the public schools than for the private colleges as far as the actual drop itself.
Mr. Chairman, just for a little bit of reference point on that one, when you have in comparison, a $300 difference on a $3,000 tuition, the percentage change is much more different than a $300 change and a $40,000 tuition and fees level. So the fluctuations just simply don't get picked up as much over time due to the tuition levels and fees at our institutions.
But does Mr. Hawley want to come up? Is he here? Here he is. And comment on
the my name is Chris Hawley. I'm the System Director for Student Financial Aid at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And this is the first that I've seen this grant or this graph, but I think it's worth pointing out a couple of things about it. One is that you pointed out that the slope, the downward slope, seems to be more significant at the NSCU 2 and NSCU 4 and the University of Minnesota, and I would suggest that that reflects the tuition increases that we've had to undergo over that period of time as well. This is the percentage of the tuition. In other words, our students have been perhaps somewhat disadvantaged by the tuition increases and the state grant not being able to fully keep up with that. The second piece I would mention is that the other side of this that you don't see is that the average grants for our students, while they may be 104% of tuition, are smaller than the average grants than their grant would be if they were attending the University of Minnesota or one of the private colleges. What you don't see on here is that the 104% of the lower cost of the grant is lower.
Where do we fit? Are our two-year institutions some of the highest in the country for tuition?
I believe that's correct, yes.
And where are our four-year?
Probably in the middle. In the middle, I think.
Mr. McMahon, where do we fit as far as our private colleges in Minnesota versus an average nationally?
We're comparable across the nation. Private, you know, none of our schools are up at the level of Harvard and Princeton, although we think their quality is just as good as those institutions.
You have great institutions, I would say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But it's, for the most part across the nation, you're going to see private colleges within the same range that our schools are in. Right now, our tuition fees within our institutions range from $24,000 to $48,000. And most private higher education across the nation is in a similar situation.
And Mr. Zetterberg?
Mr. Chair, the last time I looked, the 2 years were actually the second highest in the nation. And if you look at what she referred to as flagship institutions like the Twin Cities campus, we were seventh.
Seventh in? Among land-grant colleges, or?
No, just so-called flagships, so the most prominent public universities.
Well, members, you know, the two-year institutions, and we've got our caps in here. We have talked to the NSCU system. You know, the governor asked me to blame him, which I am more than willing to do, for putting tuition caps of some sort, and we've got that language on the $300 each year at the university and the 5% down to 2% at the NSCU system. But maybe, you know, as we move forward here, Madam Chair.
Just sorry to interrupt you, but just as long as you're talking about the caps, we don't think it's such a good idea to micromanage. We elect a board of regents, and we have a Minsky board to make those decisions. And they've been very sensitive to our concern about tuition and have policies to limit the increase in tuition. So I don't think we have to do that in statute.
Well, Madam Chair, that's the difference between, we're just a bunch of,
meddlers.
You know, I mean, look at us over here. Just a bunch. Look at them. Right from Representative Farland. Look at Representative Lodge.
I'm bringing the crew down.
Yeah, I know. You know, we're just a bunch of hicks. But, you know, we think that the legislature is supposed to, have the responsibility of making sure that when we give out, you know, billions of dollars, that we try to do what's best for our constituents and our residents of this state. And, we did it, we had money to work with 2 years ago. We did a great job. You're great to work with. I like when those Range Rustlers come out, you know. People probably don't know that you're a Ranger, you know. She is a Ranger, but coming around
here.
Coming around, Madam Chair, is you know, a chart of what's happened in our public schools and public institutions. And I don't want to see what happened in the early years of the of this decade happen again, because we did get a handle on it with our, you know, with the money that we gave out 2 years ago, and we did have a big discussion and promises from both Minsky and the university about tuition. And if you look at this chart, you know, I don't want to see those columns go back up to 10 and 13 and 16 and 12%. So I think we're pretty adamant on this. We're going to hold at least our private institutions accountable as far as our public, excuse me, and the private.
Don't give Mr. McMahon a heart attack.
I don't want to hurt him. He's got a new baby at home. My, I think I even gave him a card or something, you know, a present. A little book, right?
You did. Thank you very much.
That's got to be worth a couple hundred million there.
Mr. Chairman, just for your information, it is appearing like something the colleges within our association will have the lowest tuition increases that they've had in a number of years this year, in recognition of what families are going through. They're trying their best to keep keep their costs increasing as low as possible.
Well, and members, if you look at the chart, look at the 7-8 when we did give some money to the university. Maybe Mr. Zetterberg, does Mr. Zetterberg have a copy of this?
Yes, I do.
You know, wants to comment, but when we gave a pretty good bump to the university, we still saw a pretty good bump in tuition. And
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Before Mr. Zetterberg speaks, what he's going to say is that we worked out this middle-income scholarship idea to hold down those tuition increases. So this is just the straight ticket price, right? I mean, to me, your chart actually proves that they got the message that these double-digit tuition increases were not sustainable, that they, the last time we had a shortfall, the higher ed budget was mostly balanced on the back of the students, and that we just can't do that anymore. So they've come down significantly. And in addition, you know, Minsky has come down very far in their increases. There's still inflation. And in addition, the university came up with this very creative idea, I think, with Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
They think you worked it out together.
How come you didn't
for the middle-income scholarship?
Yes, so are you accepting the middle-income language?
I think they're doing it, so I don't know if we need the language. Anyway,
well,
you called on Mr. Zetterberg.
Mr. Zetterberg, you want to comment on?
Well, first, with respect to the middle-income scholarship, I was the one who happens with university state funding for the upcoming budget. With respect to tuition increases, Mr. Chairman, it was necessary to provide the kind of education that students coming to the Twin Cities campus expect. Our applications are at an all-time high. Our graduation rates are at an all-time high. We feel that the students who come to the Twin Cities campus get an excellent education. And every year, we do our best to provide that as efficiently as we possibly can.
I just wanted to kind of go back to the CHAP issue and the chart, and why I thought this one graph from the private colleges was important, because it does address that CHAP issue of how it doesn't matter where we set it. Because as you can see, the University of Minnesota is down to 80%, and certainly the privates are down to 35%. And even though I acknowledge that the grants for the Minsky institution's students are less, if we added the amount of state subsidy we already put into the institution, the assistance for their education is probably more than what we provide for the privates. In grant money, even with the cap, even if we would raise the cap, I mean, when you think that we're buying down that tuition by a little over half, you add that onto what they get in state grants, we are investing quite a bit more in the students who are going to the public institutions with their grants than we are coming close to the ones who go to the privates with the grants. Because all we're doing is the grants for the privates.
And that, Senator, there's no argument there, but the MNSCU and the university system belong to the people. It's the state's responsibility, I think, not just in K-12, but in higher education to educate our public. And, so there's no argument here that the argument should be, why have we kept the language in state law that our goal is to be at two-thirds for our state institution, and we're barely, I don't even know if we're at 50. And are we at, Mr. Zetterberg, are we at 50 even at the university?
You're at about a third.
So, and about I don't 50. Know where we're at, Minsky, right? At
just about 50.
Just about 50%. So, we've been going down and down and down, and, the student tuition has been going up, and I'm glad that we were able to keep it here. But I've kind of worked out the language that we have in the bill regarding tuition here has been worked out maybe a little begrudgingly with both systems, but nonetheless, I didn't agree to it. I just didn't do this on a whim. We brought, them in and talked to them and thought what we could do with the stimulus package and how we could use the stimulus package to the, best advantage for the students. Now, again, I want to publicly state here that holding those tuitions to 5 and 2 at the MNSCU system, buying it down to 2 with the stimulus package, and at the university creates a huge, huge cliff out there in 12 and 13. And unless the economy picks up, unless we find some money, unless both systems come forward with, some of the language we have in here to prepare for that cliff, students are going to see a huge tuition increases again on the scale of what we saw in the 2002-2003 area. But, I'm just really, really concerned about the whole tuition issue, and I think everybody here at the table is.
Mr. Chairman, when we've been confirming the MNSCU trustees, we've been asking the question about tuition. And each of them has told us that tuition is a concern of theirs and that one of their top priorities is to hold down tuition. But they would like to be in charge of the system. And certainly our role is to be to provide accountability and oversight. Certainly that's, Mr. Chairman, if you could listen to me and say that's fine. That certainly is important. And looking at the MNSCU side by side, and even though you told me you worked out that language with them, they still say they prefer the Senate position.
Let me see that.
And we're also looking for something like that from the university for you to weigh in as to whether you prefer the Senate or House provision in the university areas.
Now, I see your thing here. But
we may still prefer the House position in a couple areas, but mostly the Senate position they prefer.
Well, they're not educated in the issues. That's the problem. I would imagine that they probably prefer our House position in the financial aid, which is the most important. So I'll tell you what. We'll give you almost all the language you have regarding, and then we'll take our financial package and we can go home.
We're close.
We're going by.
We're close.
What means?
I think that's a good offer. we'll think about it and get back to you.
Okay, yeah. We'll give up Native America clothing.
Everything. You're going to give up Native America.
That's not important,
I thought that was the most important thing.
No, that is important. You're great Aunt Elsie Wormerson.
Yeah.
Yes, Elsie. You know, I door knocked, she'd tell me about her Finnish Russian. You're finished, Rutson.
German.
That was a married name. Her married name. But she would tell me about, how important it was to the working people. And
Representative Rukavina, did you really talk to Aunt Elsie? She was the black dog of the family. She was the Republican.
I know, but she voted for me. She voted for me all the time, but I don't care. I never argued anybody that votes for me. But she still had those working class looks, and I'm not ashamed of the fact that I try to push.
So actually, Redwoods.
Yes, I know. I didn't want to bring up the socialist hall of Pike Township, but
by my great uncle.
Yes. But But I'm willing to give all that up maybe if you accept our financial package and then go home. But we got to, I guess, talk to leadership about our numbers.
Does that include all your language about the central office and everything?
And
all your language about the Board of Regents and the Minshew Board.
The Minshew Board I'll give up. I mean, I don't want to make you mad and the governor mad and Senator Roman mad and Representative Farland mad. So I give up the Board of Trustees, although I would like some language to have a little bit of diversity on that board. I don't think
the
chamber and the and the business partnership should run the board. I think there's maybe one person that somewhat has a labor look, and I would like to.
Well, I worked very hard to get Ms. Sundin on the Minshew board. You could look at our at the language that I put in the bill, which requires the advisory committee to send all their recommendations to us as well as to the governor. Because I think it is a good idea for us to be able to see all the members that the advisory committee recommended. It makes it easier for us, if we confirm, to see who is in the mix and see if we agree that the governor picked the best person.
Well, you know, I think that the Board of Trustees and the Board of Regents should represent, you know, a cross-section of the Minnesota population, and I don't know if it does that right now. And that was my only concern with that.
And I do share your concern.
No.
But we have a governor.
Do you want to talk about any of our proposals as far as on the grant program, though?
Well, you could.
Any more comments from
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Zetterberg.
Well, I'd like to attempt to do a better job of making a point than I made that between the cash contingency and the difference between just increasing the LME versus increasing other components of the program. So let me try with this simple example. If you do nothing, change the state grant program, and if tuition in few institutions were to go up by $100, for students who are eligible for state grants, the increase in state grants for them without you're doing anything would be $54. That's because the program automatically recognizes tuition increases in MINSCU. That's great, by the way. If you were then to increase the LME for all students, those who are eligible for state grants, whether they were in a private college or at the university or in a community college, would get $54. So MINSCU students would get $108, which is great, and students at the university and students in private colleges would get $54. That's the difference between if you just do it with LME. If you also want students at the university and the private colleges to get $108 for the same thing that you're giving to MINSCU students, then you have to do something with the tuition tax. That's the simple point I was trying to make. Secondly, one final comment about tuition rates. You'll recall, Chair Rubavina, when we had a three-hour session with you, it was a very good opportunity for us to talk about the university. We did talk a lot about tuition and about financial aid. And one of the things I pointed out to you is that last year, the university's total scholarship dollars for undergraduate students was more than federal grants and state grants combined. It is not enough simply to look at tuition rates to get an understanding of whether or not an institution is affordable. We are very much aware of the need to make sure that the university remains affordable, both for low-income students and also for middle-income students. This coming year, there will be more than 5,200 Minnesota resident undergraduates who will attend the university and who will have the tuition required being fully covered by federal grants, state grants, and university scholarships. And the problem that we have when we're looking just at tuition rates is that we tend to forget the financial aid, the grants, and the scholarship assistance that these students receive. And that is just as important in keeping higher education affordable as the tuition rate.
Mr. Zetterberg,
you have no argument with me that you've done a good job with your scholarship. Is that what it is, the low-income scholarship and the middle-income scholarship? You did a very good job with it last time, and I don't think you have any problem with the language that we have in the bill as far as the middle-income scholarship.
Mr. Chair, no. Again, it's something that we
any other comments?
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a few comments as long as we're sort of into this part of the bill and talking about the various impacts of making different changes to the state grant program. Excuse me. And I guess I would agree with Mr. Zetterberg that just looking at tuition by itself might not be the best way to approach this. I think maybe it's important to look at the financial strength of the folks to whom the grants are going. And to look maybe, first of all, I want to say thank you because I think we're all appreciative of the fact that both bodies were able to find ways to keep this surplus money in financial aid and that's extremely important. It potentially makes life-changing opportunities available to students and to their families. I think it's important to take a look at what is producing the surplus. And as you all know, what's producing the surplus is that the federal government decided that there was a need to provide supplemental programs to students. And in Minnesota, as the Pell Grant goes up, the state grant goes down, those savings are aggregated, and that's what produces the surplus. And I think I'm speaking for what the students from our association said yesterday, which is that it's important to look at where those dollars are coming from. We heard yesterday that the Pell Grant program and the state grant program are different programs from different sources, and they have different purposes and different rules, and that's true. I think, though, that both programs are in agreement that one of the reasons they exist is to serve the most financially disadvantaged students in the state. And, in fact, I think you get agreement from all the financial aid directors in the state and probably the folks at the Office of Higher Education that with very few exceptions, the Pell Grant program serves the most financially disadvantaged students. It focuses on the families that have the most need for help to pay for their education. So if, in fact, the surplus is being produced by reducing the state grants to those students, I think it's our position that it is right and fair to look for a method of redistributing those funds that then recognizes all of those students. And I agree with Mr. Michikanis when he said yesterday that one of the most important things we can try to do with the state grant program is to price it correctly. The way the program is constructed in Minnesota, there's really sort of two buckets for pricing. There's tuition, and then there's everything else, which we call living and miscellaneous expenses, or LME, and that's books and supplies, tools, cost of feeding yourself and family, medical expenses, room costs, transportation, whether that's a bus pass or whether it's a car and insurance, commuting costs. All of those things are in there. And so if you want to try to fix the cost or price the cost correctly, you can work with both of those. If you take steps to try to price the tuition correctly, you will be providing assistance or a better price for about 45% of the students in the program and the students whose grants were reduced because of the Pell Grant increase. If you try to fix the price by focusing on everything else, the legitimate expenses for students to go to college, the LME, then in fact you're providing a better price for 100% of the students in the program, including all of those 55% of students whose Pell Grants produce the surplus, who are going to schools that won't, where the tuition cap won't affect them. And I think that's what the students were trying to say, and I believe that that's true, and that it's important.
Any closing comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, using the example I had just used before, if you were to increase only the LME, then Pell Eligible students in Minsku would see an increase in the combined state and Pell Grant awards of $108, and Pell Eligible students in private colleges at the University of Minnesota would see an increase of half that amount. I do not agree that simply increasing the LME is the best way to provide an increase for the lowest income students in Toronto.
I think the only thing to add, not to be redundant of what you've heard from my colleagues on my left and right, First of all, thank you to both sides for your commitment to providing financial aid for low-income students. And in particular to you, Mr. Chairman, and to you, Senator Pappas, for your leadership in leading your caucuses and your committees to making these decisions. I know in these economic times of the budget deficit, these weren't necessarily easy decisions to make, but I think from the higher ed community, I can say that we thank you. You all made the right decisions in keeping this money available for students. The only thing to add in that hasn't been said yet is right now, under any of the proposals on the table, whether it's the health position, the Senate position, or the Office of Higher Ed position, the students who are Pell eligible will be receiving every dollar intended to them from Congress. None of the proposals is shifting the dollars away from those students. They will receive their full Pell benefit. The question I think before this conference committee today and tomorrow, and hopefully not much longer than that, is
this one may drag on a little bit. We got a lot of money here.
I think the key question is, and from the historical standpoint of this program, how does the state best leverage the state's investment into the financial aid pool? One of the things that the state has had a commitment from going back to the early 80s when this program was turned into what it is today is a recognition that there is financial need above and beyond the income cohort that the Pell Grant serves. And by building the program around the Design for Shared Responsibility, we're able to impact students above and beyond those that would only be impacted by the Pell Grant. And then the question before you all is, how do we best leverage the state dollars moving forward? There are plenty of proposals before you. All of them leverage them in different ways. I think the key question for you to come to terms with is, what's the optimum point for the state of Minnesota?
One last question to all of you before you go. I don't know, maybe it's for Ms. Morgan in the case of you, Mr. Holling, but what's happening with enrollments in this these tough economic times at the university, at the privates, and at Mr. Zetterberg, you want to start?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we're obviously very interested in that. For the spring semester we're currently in, we did not see any change whatsoever. It's a matter of fact, there were some students who had left the university a number of years ago who came back. So, but there was basically no change. Tomorrow is the deadline sort of nationwide for everyone to commit to an institution, so it's a very nervous time for all institutions. Our commitments are fairly normal. They're perhaps down a little bit, but we're still projecting the enrollment for next fall that we would have projected a year ago. So there's a bit of uncertainty, though. There's no doubt about that.
I think from our institutions, to echo what Mr. Zetterberg had to say, there is a lot of uncertainty. Families are still trying to make decisions. Families have a lot of uncertainty as to where they're going, where the economy is taking them, whether or not, if they're a dual-income family, if both dual incomes will be in place come July, August, September. The other issue that they're wrestling with right now is the state of the credit industry. The ability for families to get private loans, and our understanding is pretty much non-existent. So above and beyond what students typically get from federal programs or things from the private sector who are participating in federal programs, that's about it that folks are able to get from the credit market, which just means that the financial aid side of things are that much more important. Our numbers are probably not where they have been over the past couple of years. One of the concerns that we do have is with the number of students that we enroll from out of state, the competition for those students is tremendous. If you take a couple of our schools that do a tremendous job recruiting from out state and that are our two most nationally recognized schools between Pelton and McAllister, those schools are competing with students who are applying to all of the Ivy Leagues, all of the major East Coast schools, Stanford, so on and so forth. and there's a lot of competition to keep those students. And for Minnesota, there's a lot of benefit for those schools to be able to recruit those students, because a lot of them, once they get here, realize that this is a pretty nice place to live, and decide to stick around here, especially with the business community that we have in the Twin Cities, with the number of international companies that we have located here. So our schools are trying to do what they can to build their classes for next year, but they are seeing strains within families.
And I had heard that your enrollment is down. Is that, are they flat or are they down? That was a long answer.
Well, I know a lot of information in that. They are probably down at this point. There's still a lot of time between now and now and the 1st of September. I think you're going to see some fluctuation from some efforts to get those up. The issue that we do face is as enrollments go down, that's hitting the bottom lines of all the schools. I think you can expect that one of the major financing methods that our schools have, or the two major financing methods our schools have, are tuition and their endowments. If their class sizes are decreasing, their tuition enrollment or tuition revenue will be down. And I think you can probably estimate that endowments are down 20% or more across any foundation in the nation right now, higher ed included, which means that there is less revenue coming into schools. These are hitting the school's bottom lines. We have schools who are beginning to talk. They push this off as long as they can, but they are beginning to talk about layoffs and cutting positions. It's the second to last decision they'll make. The last decision they'll make is to cut financial aid. The second to last decision is to lay off employees, and a number of them are moving towards that position.
Mr. Howell.
I'm sorry, what was the question? Judy tells me that our enrollment for the current year is up about 2%, and that varies institution by institution, but across the system, that's for the current year. That's not trying to project forward into the next year yet.
Is it heavier in the 2 years versus the 4 year, Ms. Flynn?
Yes.
So the average is
across all of them is about 2%.
But the 2 year versus the 4 year is, Ms. Gordon, you want to come up and
maybe 3? I think if I'm interpreting our hand signals correctly, for the colleges it's about probably 3%. If I could make a comment on
go
that
ahead.
As well, thank you. We can't cap enrollment at our 2 year colleges, and as we're looking at what's happening with the economy and what's happening with the workforce, I think we're anticipating that a lot of those colleges, there will be a major enrollment impact. Some folks would say we don't have the luxury of capping enrollment. I prefer to think that we have the opportunity to help the workforce and to help the state of Minnesota, because we take those students and we provide them what we think they need and what they think they need. We're not talking about recruiting perhaps middle-income or upper-middle-income students from out of state to come to the state. We're talking about serving the citizens who are here now and who need help. When the enrollment is up, that actually hits our bottom line, but that's what we're here to do. In fact, that's really the kind of the definition of a public higher ed system, is the state does invest in us, and in turn, we turn around and educate the students of the state who we don't have the luxury, again, of endowments to be even hit by what's happening with the financial market. And again, I think that's one of the differences between a public system and a private system. So all of those things are hitting us, too. But we will be the system. Ours will be the schools that take the students who are coming back for retraining, trying to reenter the workforce. That's who we serve, and we don't turn them away. We can't, and that's a good thing, because that's what we're here for. If I might make one other clarification that's slightly off this topic but concerns the financial aid, the state grant provisions that were in the bill, I just wanted to try and clarify something that I think is often misunderstood, and that's the House proposal for the fifth year of eligibility under the state grant, the ninth and tenth semesters. I just want to make sure everyone understands that doesn't mean that the student has received the state grant for 4 years and is now going to receive it for a fifth year. That means they've been enrolled in higher education for 4 years. They may never have gotten a state grant. They may never have even applied for a state grant. A maybe somewhat extreme example, but a real example, would be someone who 15 or 20 years ago went to their local junior college or community college for a year. They're getting their feet wet. They're trying to understand. After that year, maybe they realized that's not really where their strengths were. Maybe they thought, you know, I'm good with cars. I want to be an auto mechanic. They went to a technical college for 2 years. They became an auto mechanic, and for 15 years they've had a good job and they made a good living. Maybe they worked for a Danny Hecker dealership. That job's gone. And in fact, the likelihood that they're going to get a similar job is pretty low right now with, I don't know, what is it, 60 dealerships closing in the state or something? It's been 15 or 20 years and they've got a family now. They've got mouths to feed. They've got people to take care of. They've read about the federal stimulus bill and they've seen that there's an electronic medical record technology. They think, well, maybe that's something that'll be around for a while. I'm going to go try to get trained so I can do that. That's a two-year program. So they've gone back to school. They're doing what you know they need to do for themselves and for the state. And they've never applied for financial aid before, but they need to now because they've got a family and they've got expenses. And the state grant program is available for them for that first year of that program, and that's tremendous because that is what's going to allow them to go to school. It's going to reduce their borrowing. Now they come to the second year of that program, and even though they've only gotten one state grant, they're not eligible because the way the rules are, it's 4 years of enrollment, not 4 years of state grant. So I just wanted to clarify that the fifth year that you're talking about doesn't mean you're giving people a fifth state grant necessarily. It means that they're being considered for eligibility in a fifth year of enrollment.
Yes, and that's very important to point out. Any questions of the witnesses? We have to go to, I think, session starts at 10:30.
Yes, 10:30. Mr. Chairman, can I go public with this?
Well, you can make any offer
okay.
You want. You're
Mr. Fast. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure you're ready. I know that you feel really strongly about certain aspects of the state grants, and we feel pretty strongly that we shouldn't be micromanaging the Board of Regents and the Minsky Board. So here's an offer for you to consider, and I don't have it typed up, but it's pretty simple. We would be willing to go almost to your level on LME at $43 million, $20 million for the four-year cap, approximately, you know, we have to figure out the numbers, $5 million for the summer bridge grant eligibility,
$20
million, $5 million for the summer bridge state grant eligibility, leave $5 million on the bottom line, that's $73 million, and then we would like you to drop all your directive languages to Minsky and to the Board of Regents. So that's something you could...
Even the tuition language that you're talking
yes.
about?
Yes.
I mean, all the other stuff.
Well, you know, we'll negotiate. But that's what we would like.
Well, I think money's going to take a little longer to figure out here, but that's a nice starter for you. But I, you know, I'll have to talk to my members about the whole proposal, but how about if I take all of your language on the region selection and throw out my, you know, my Board of Trustees language and
The region selection language in the Senate bill is just to make it consistent with what's already been agreed upon for the rules. And then extra provision on the advisory committee that they can't serve more than 12 years. So that's pretty... And then you would drop...
I would drop my... I don't think you should probably obey the Constitution. I mean, I'll let them come around, but...
To drop? That well, I think that sounds like a good trade.
I'll do that, and in return...
Senate region.
And in return, you give me my tuition cap language and my water down made in USA language, which is just advisory.
So it's getting more complicated now. So we would give you the tuition cap...
Tuition cap
and the watered down made in Minnesota. I think
made,
I need more.
Made in America.
Made in America. I think. Oh, made in America.
No,
oh, I kind of like made in Minnesota.
We can't do that legally. Probably can't do the other.
I think I need a little bit. We do need to work with the university on that tuition cap language. That's not quite ready to go.
Think about that.
I think I need a little bit more, though.
And then one last thing. I can't believe the stink that OAC made about the FAFSA language and trying to get everybody
on that.
So how about just for this biennium, we'll see what happens with it. And I'll throw that in.
Are you trying to wrap up the whole bill?
No, but just on this proposal, on this language proposal. We'll throw in the FAFSA language just for the biennium with the suggestion that Ms. Steinsab will have a waiver provision in there. And where's Trish? Here?
Trish, yeah.
There she is. And we'll have that. But I don't like the language I saw that you emailed me to. I mean, I've got to make a decision, you know. So could you live with having just for the biennium and letting people opt out, but making everybody aware of the program? Just that means.
Mr. Chair, we can certainly put together language that would try to implement that desire.
How about I put it together? Do you agree?
The systems are telling us they feel that it would be burdensome to try to
implement. I'm just talking Minsky.
Just Minsky?
Yes, where most of our students go to the public institutions. So think about that, and then we'll break. And can we come back here? I mean, we can meet back and forth.
We're in session until 3. So we can't meet until 3.
Why don't we recess until 3 then?
Okay.
And I think we said our spoke that we're meeting at 4 with Thomas, on 4:30. So we could probably get an hour and a half of work done.
Okay.
And so we'll be in recess until 3 then. Unless you can get out a little earlier. Now, how about 3 or whenever you adjourn?
Okay.
Okay.
That's good.
And then we're in recess. My best class in school.
Apologize. We had a long debate on nuclear power. So I will be calm. Not go nuclear.
You've seen me go nuclear.
Well,
what's that?
You've seen me go nuclear, remember?
I have.
I wish you still, Mr. Chair.
Anyway, we don't really want to discuss, and we talked a little bit about your offer, but we really don't know, you know, what's happening as far as targets from leadership, and there is a little mix of, you know, that state grant program that we have in our bill from the governor's chief, so we just didn't entertain that, but we do have a bunch of policy items that we'd like to offer to you. Ms. Novak has something.
Offer them or discuss them?
Well, we'll offer them and then we can discuss them. And then you guys can think about it. And are we going to meet tomorrow? Because I'm not going to go to the university. Well, I heard you wanted to have a committee meeting.
Well,
you're going to take the chair away from me and everything else. So.
The leadership wanted me to do it, but I just figured we weren't going to meet because you have your groundbreaking.
Well, I can't because I have to meet with Senator Thomas.
You've got to finish the bill.
Yes, so if you want to meet earlier tomorrow and go over items, I'll have one of my very competent members, chair with your co-chair with you, or be sitting up here with you, and I'll be back and forth between something.
Okay.
So I don't know. Anyhow, here's our offer.
Andrew's gonna go tomorrow in finance. Andrew's gonna go in finance. Jake's gonna go in finance.
Go back. Do you want to go over the offer? I'm sorry.
So should we get to the audience?
I suppose the audience can have it after. Did everybody have
time?
A couple more questions there.
So I'll have when you're ready. Has everybody gotten a copy?
Yes.
On your side. Gassy, would you care to walk through it there?
Mr. Chair, the House language offer, the first section deals with Minsky, and the references are to the side-by-side. So on R12, the offer is to accept the Senate language for Subdivision 3, which is the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. So lines 10.24 to 11.14, and to delete the a part of Subdivision 4 of the House language on that same page. it would be lines 9.29 to 10.13. And then on R13, to accept other parts of that subdivision, paragraph B and paragraph C. Those are the language that deals with the federal funds being used as a bridge to future costs and the tuition increase limit and buy down. And then also to accept the House language on R14 for subdivision 2, which specifies appropriations and language for the central office mm-hmm. and central shared services.
Where is this? Say it again.
On R14.
R14.
Senator Pappas, and that would be line 7.4 to 7.10. Obviously, the finance is not settled, so it would be the language there.
7.4 to
7.10.
That, excuse me, I'm sorry, sorry, Ms. Novak, but Representative Rukavina, that does have, it does look like it has a fiscal impact, that line, those lines. I mean, there's a dollar amount on 7.10.
There is a dollar amount there, but that is money that's in the base that we allocate, if I'm not mistaken. We try to allocate money to the different campuses on the same formula for internal. So, well, we're just offering this.
Okay, all right, I guess we'll share my, I'll just say I had a concern there.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, on R14 and R15, accept the House language in paragraph C, again, the tuition limit and buy down and the central services. On R14 and 15, subdivision C, except 7.11 to 8.6. Those are paragraphs A, B, and C, which have some directives, increasing campus support, no reduction in campus eligibility, and the requirement for an expenditure reduction plan. And R15 would be to delete House language paragraph B, which have some prohibitions on spending for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. That would be lines 8.7 to 8.21, so in effect accepting the Senate position there. On R16, accept the House language in paragraph E and paragraph F. E has some limits on spending, F limits spending on technology and access. That would be lines 8.22 to 9.5. And then skipping through page R28, this is the test. This is limits the board policy on how many credits are required for a degree. The proposal is to accept the Senate language in Section 9, which is the repeal of that of the requirement for the board to adopt a policy. That would be lines 19.23 to 20.12 on the Senate side, and to delete the House language in Section 30, which provides a moratorium for the credit limit for the ASL degree and increases the chancellor's waiver authority. On R, and then we skip again to page R46. This is the proposal to accept the Senate language. It's just on the very bottom of R46. It's actually Senate sections 24 to 28, and these are on pages R46 to 49. It's all of the Senate changes to the Board of Trustees. There's one proposal to modify the Senate language on R-47, and that would be on line 34.1 to increase the number of labor appointments to 2. And then correspondingly, it would delete all of the House sections 14 to 17 and also the repeal of the Trustee Advisory Council, which occurs on R-62. The next section is the University of Minnesota, so we have to go back to R-17. And the proposal is to accept the Senate language in Subdivision 2, which is lines 12.25 to 12.27. And then to delete the House language in paragraph A on that page, which is a prohibition on new managerial positions and salary increases. So it would be deleting lines 11.18 to 11.22. And then on the next page, R-18, the proposal is to accept the House language in paragraphs B, C, D, E, and F. And these are various, requires an expenditure reduction plan. It provides for the University of Minnesota scholarship, native language programs, and the veterinary diagnostic laboratory. So the accepted languages would be on lines 11.23 to 12.16. Again, on R-18 to R-19, the proposal is to accept the Senate language of Subdivision 4, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, lines 13.1 to 13.25, and to delete the House language on paragraph A of the federal stimulus, which I believe starts on the next page, 16.30 to 17.14, and to accept the House language in paragraph B, which is another description of using federal funds as a bridge to future cuts. In the next page, on R-20, the proposal is to accept the House language in paragraph C, which has the House's tuition limits of $300 per year for Minnesota undergraduates. That's line 17.24 to 17.31. And then again, skipping to R-51, 53, the proposal again would be to accept the Senate language making changes to the selection of Board of Regents candidates. Senate line 37.1 to 38.10, and once again deleting the House language in section 21 and the repeal of the Regents Advisory Council on page R-62. And the only other proposal is on R-34 to accept the House language in section 3, which is the sale of American-made clothing. 21.1 to 21.6.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
Senator. So in our previous discussion where we talked about going in your direction for the state grant, if you went in our direction in terms of eliminating most, if not all, of the kind of prescriptive language from Michigan University. So it looks like you have retained just a few things. You retained kind of the tuition limits, the something to do with the central office. I quite follow that. The central office language. And the American-made clothing. Sure, do you want to make that Minnesota-made clothing?
I don't think I can, really.
Yeah.
I tried to do that,
and
I was told by counsel I got a better shot at it.
Some constitutional issue there. Yeah. And then you added another labor appointment.
Yes.
Okay, I mean, I do that kind of fast, and so I feel like we need
that
to kind of look
over
this.
That would be the only thing that we were different on with your language regarding both the regents and the trustees as we gave it to you, but I would mention that labor.
Right, I do appreciate you, Mr. Chairman, in terms of some of the descriptive language. I was actually kind of surprised on the degree credit limit issue, because I know the students want to comment on that. They've talked to me about
it. I know
that.
They do, but I just figured, well, you know, we tried it. It was a headache. The teachers got worked up. The students got a little worked up when the teachers did. I think the administration really made a mountain out of the molehill, but I think it was a good concept, because I think there is some credit creep that happened just to get a little more money spent back in the early parts of the, 2003 and 4 in that area. But, you know, it's been a headache, and I didn't want the students to feel scared and the faculty to feel threatened. And I know they tried to reach a compromise, which I think we had in our bill. But it was something in my heart that I thought was good for the students, but maybe it was a dumb idea. Although I see Senator Roebling is kind of, I think you want to fix
Representative Rexine, I kind of liked your proposal. I mean, it allowed for clear waivers. I mean, they could come in. I didn't think that was unreasonable.
Did you get the phone calls on that I did, though?
Mr. Chair, I did get some of them. I know that in some programs we're going to have to allow more credits. And I think if they can come in and show why, they'll get them. But I just want to make sure that they're always held accountable for what they're doing.
Well, and Madam Chair, there was one other question we had, and we were actually going to give it to you on language that you had relating to some type of capping on programs and MINSU doing. Ms. Novak, what case is that language on the Senate? But we had some of our members who were a little fearful that you might be, you know, stopping hurting the students, and I think what page is that? You know,
450. R50.
Yes, regarding the
whether
the programs are actually, there's jobs out there for them. Let's see,
R50, Section 31. Mr. Chairman,
and I think Representative McFarland has some questions on it, as I do too. So, Representative McFarland, do you want to share your concerns?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. I was concerned about if we were, if it could be a must in there, we may want to change it to May. I'm concerned that we're only allowing private schools to be offering some of these programs when there might be an indication that some of those fields are full. And I would not want to cut out the MINSU schools from providing some of those programs.
Mr. Hammond, remember we have that joint hearing with the electricians?
Mm-hmm.
This was directly in response to the joint hearing we had with the electricians and then the legislative auditor's recommendations. That's where our staff wrote this language. It's actually not as prescriptive as some of the unions would like it to be, but, you know, we do have this issue with an oversupply in some of the trades areas, and it's very difficult to do that. You know, you're right, Dunwoody has an electrician program. Maybe we don't have any control over what they're going to offer. I got a call from the carpentry people at MCTC. They're all concerned that the carpentry program is going to be discontinued at MCTC. And they're probably doing what they should do is, there's one at St. Paul College, or there's one at Century. And we can't have carpentry programs at every school in the metro area, because then we produce too many carpenters.
Wouldn't that be for MINSU to make that decision with the information that they have, instead of for the legislature to prescribe that?
Well, actually, Representative Carlin, you're making my argument. What I make is that we shouldn't be so prescriptive and telling MINSU what to do. So it's just because this particular issue has been such a sore point, I thought the chairman would actually like this provision.
Well, but I, Madam Chair, I have to say, I don't think I told them academically what they have to do. I don't like to meddle in, you know. I just like to meddle in the money.
Yeah.
Because I feel the legislature, has the responsibility to see the investment is, you know, is done in a proper way to help our citizenry. But you actually started telling them what programs and that to teach, which maybe we should start talking about the stem cell too while we're at it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it is a dialogue that we have to have as we're cutting the state budget. We have an ongoing issue with producing an oversupply of elementary school teachers. And that's an area in which some of the schools, to their credit, have started telling students, well, there may not be a job for you in Minnesota unless you go into special ed or unless you go into science or math. And that's kind of a counseling function if you really want to find a job in Minnesota. If you want to go out state, there's plenty of jobs for you to leave the state. But we do want to keep them in our state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a delicate balance here between hoping that Misty gets the message and assuming that they get the message, and you know we want them to be nimble like some of the private colleges, the for profits are very nimble and responsive to the labor market. Mm-hmm. You know they see a niche and they're in there offering the skills.
Because well, we actually were thinking about letting you have that one, and then Dr. McFarland didn't feel comfortable and wanted to know a little bit more about it. And is your comfort level any?
Mr. Chair, I would feel much better if we would change line 36.31 from must to may.
Would you
both must?
Both must or?
You could return.
On R50, line 36.31.
And you want a 36.302?
If we're going to do
it, we should do that.
And also the, on 33.
It's worth having a comment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Robin.
I do think that the first must is a good thing. I think they should be doing it. They maybe are doing it, that they are assessing the labor market. It's hard to do that, though. But I had an issue with the requirement on how many, I mean, if they have to contract programs, because as I read this, it may be that right now when we have nobody getting jobs in the trades, so if you're assessing the labor market today, by rights, we should close all of our trades programs. But then, I mean, if we're following this to the letter, but then when things pick up, to gear all those things up, to get all those staff people back, I think, you know, it becomes a real issue if we don't give them some leeway in how they can handle this. And the other thing I did argue when we did this in committee is students who can't get into MNSCU will go to private institutes or even South, North Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin. If that's what they want to do, that's their passion in life, they'll seek it out somewhere else and pursue those careers. And I don't know that we stop them from getting that training. We just make it more difficult for them.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, Senator Robley, when we had this discussion before, I think that the assessing of labor market data, it goes out into the future. It doesn't just look at this biennium or the next biennium. It really does go, I don't know how many years it goes out. But, you know, so we know that after this recession, when the economy comes back, we are going to still need those positions. So I don't think it's quite as short-sighted as you think.
I think all the jobs we'd have if we got everything made in America.
Made in Minnesota.
So, well, do you want some time to look at this? And I don't know what time is it. We have
4:10.
Okay.
Yeah. What comes along with this offer then? Is this offer independent?
This is an independent.
It's not connected to the state grant.
I didn't do anything. We didn't discuss the state grant yet. I mean, we okay. The offer. We will come back probably on Monday with some type of comment.
Do you want to focus tomorrow on getting your other bill done?
I have to do that tomorrow, but that doesn't mean that I'm not sure if you want to meet, and I trust all four of my members to not do anything while I'm here.
And we'll do it.
But I'm
true. That they are very capable of taking you on.
You don't want me to be possible.
Well, if you want to, if you're the chair tomorrow, if you want to have that dental discussion and you line it up with the University of Metro State, that's your business. I'm sure that our members would like to listen to the argument. Is Senator Lynch mad at me that she isn't here? Does anyone know?
Does she have reason to be, Mr. Chairman?
Pardon me?
Does she have reason to be,
wanted,
Mr. Chairman?
You know, me to hear her proposal on that, and I was kind of stubborn, and I hate to be that way to Senator Lynch, because I really liked her, but I didn't want to, you know, you can take that up tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm torn on that issue. I really am, and I'll just do kind of put my feelings on the table. I think that we probably eventually are going to have dental practitioners. We don't right now legally. I mean, Metro State can teach all they want, but nobody can practice yet. So I don't know how that's going to work. But kind of what irritated me, I think, kind of last is you know, I know a lot of students that can't get into the dental school, and so, well, I don't know if it was the dentist's initiative or what, but to open up the seats at the university for a dental practitioner, I thought if there was anything opened up, it should be to allow more people to become dentists. And that would be the responsibility then of the university. So I'm kind of torn between the whole issue. I don't know what to do on it. My dentists aren't happy, but I understand, you know, the fact that there's a real demand out there. But then again, why don't we produce more dentists at the university? And if we're going to do practitioner things, do it. Well, it's not going to. I don't know how much less expensive the other dentists. You guys can have that, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not sure if Senator Lynch wants us to take up that tomorrow, because really the Senate has a position. It's really the House that needs to figure out their position.
Yeah.
And they can decide what bill is going to be conferenced in.
So, I kind of wanted to see Norton and Lynch.
Yeah. So we will, we'll meet tomorrow. I want to know about the other conference committees that are going on. Senator Erickson Wilkes, when are you meeting tomorrow?
I don't know.
You don't know yet.
We're going to be working late tonight, so I don't know what time tomorrow yet.
Finance is meeting at 8:30 tomorrow, but they'll be done by about 10:30. So I thought we could meet at 11 for, you know, for an hour and a half, so that we're, for 2 hours, so that we're meeting. Which the leadership wants us to be meeting and working. Yeah.
And members, Ms. Novak can be here, and maybe Mr. Bird. I'll try to get Mr. Soderberg, if the other one come down and get you if you need help, Doug. And we'll have Anita Newman on your council, so we'll be okay. And Gary, I know we'll make you run back and forth, but Brooke can help us too from here.
No, I can do that.
So, Master, it's up to you.
Okay, so as of now, we'll meet at 11 tomorrow, and if anything changes, we'll email everyone and let you know.
And we will try to come back in with a package on the financial aid, which we should probably be able to move some proposal on Monday.
Okay. Because he won't be with us tomorrow. He'll be with us.
I'll be over on the other side, but I can come in.
You can come in and out. Okay.
Okay, with that, then we'll give this to you, and you can look it over and decide what you want to do, and we'll see you tomorrow meeting. For sure.